the service. As you're beginning to give this morning, we're going to finish our remaining time together from the book of Philippians. Turn with me to the book of Philippians. The book of Philippians is a blueprint. It's a blueprint on the subject matter of joy. It's here that Paul is writing from a prison. No, he was not going as the executive director of Pleasant Hills Children's Home to visit those that had been incarcerated. No, he was the incarcerated. And it's here that he begins to write this specific book in the Bible. And as he writes from this prison, he shares with you and I a blueprint on the subject matter of joy. He says there's a joy in suffering. There's a joy in serving. There's a joy in believing. And that there is a joy in giving. He wrote this letter to a church that was very dear to him. A church like you're modeling this morning, who had gone beyond their own means and trusted God for the means to help make up the difference in his life. They cared for him. They gave to him. And they ministered to him when he was in this difficult place in time. And he's writing this book in about AD 64. And he's writing it to thank them. To thank them for caring. To thank them for showing their love in his time of joy. Or as I told you, in his time of walking out a blueprint of learning that there can be joy in suffering, serving, believing, and giving. In fact, so caught up in this theme, he mentions the subject and the word joy 14 times in this epistle. And so you find that the key word in this book is to rejoice. As we venture into the fourth chapter and the fourth verse of the book of Philippians, he says that any time is the right time to rejoice. He says to rejoice in the Lord always, and I will say it again, to rejoice. Now here is this man in the midst of something that has imprisoned him. And while you and I may not be actually within the confines of a physical prison, many of us today have arrived at church and we live life in the midst of emotional things, relational things, spiritual things that are not just a challenge to us, but they imprison us. And we don't live free as a result of those things on the inside. We may be free on the outside, and yet we live in bondage on the inside. And yet, from this prison, he says, rejoice in the Lord. How many times and in how many ways? All the time and in all ways. And he says, just to make sure it's clear to you what it is I'm teaching, what it is I'm modeling from prison, I'm going to say it again. Rejoice. Then he goes on to the 19th verse. And as he writes from prison, he's a man that though he writes from prison, still possesses a promise, a hope of something else, a hope of something better. And while he's in prison, he still carries this promise close to his heart, even though he's living without the promises, provision. And so here he is in the midst of suffering. Here's Paul, the apostle, God's man, whose faith has been on trial, and he has been found guilty. He's in shackles. He's in cuffs. He's incarcerated, and he still declares, "But my God." Sometimes it takes you and I declaring, "But my God." I'm down, and I'm discouraged. But my God, I can't see fit on how I will get well or how God will heal this situation or this individual in my life. And it's in that moment that you and I must remember the rest of the story and declare, but my God. It seems as if I've just lost my job and I don't know how we're going to make it. And it looks like it's a prison to us. But my God. My child continues, though I pray, though I fast, though I speak the word of the Lord, my child continues to rebel and not be glad in the principles and the values that this home holds close to the heart of God. And it's there that you and I must learn, as Paul did, to say, to write, to declare, but my God. I wonder how many of you this morning would raise your hand and say, there's a couple of things that need God's attention in my life. In fact, they can feel like a prison to me if I'm not careful. Well, this morning, for those that have raised their hands, and those who did not raise their hands but needed to, we'll first cast out the spirit of lying. But whether you raised your hand or held it to the side, what's true for you, what's true for me, what's true for us, is that we always have my God. He writes and says, "But my God shall supply your need according to His riches in glory by Christ Jesus." From the King James Version, let's read that again. And this time, let's read it together. And as a declaration, declare, "But my God shall supply all your need according to His riches in glory by Christ Jesus." More than a bumper sticker on your car, more than a magnet that hangs from your refrigerator, more than a lecture your wife gave you on the way to church, Paul says in the 19th verse of Philippians chapter 4, "In the midst of your prison, when you've not yet seen your provision, you can declare, 'But my God.'" Not might supply, but my God shall supply. And that's all you need to know. I don't know how, I don't know when, and I don't know where, but I do know the what. And the what remains yes and amen, regardless of how dark this prison looks and feels like. There is a God who will supply. And my point is this. There's always a period of time between hearing the promise and having the provision. But it's a delicate time, this thing called waiting. How many of you are like your pastor and believe that the red light, which starts with an R, only is symbolic of a greater function? And that function means to rev your engine. That somehow when you are stopped by the red light of the law, that it seems like the light goes faster based on how much harder you are pushing the pedal to the metal. How many of you feel that pain, that truth, and that provision? How many of you feel like sometimes the most difficult thing in your life to do is to wait on anything or to wait on anyone? Let us close now for a time in the altars. That time between hearing your promise and having your provision, it's a delicate time that demands waiting. And Paul says, and he's going to teach us not just to wait, but in this blueprint of suffering, he teaches us how to rejoice and be glad. This time of waiting, this time between the promise and the provision, it's a demanding time because God will use it to teach you, to clean you, and to help empower you so that you can obey. It's a decisive time. It's a decisive time that can do one of two things. It can either endue you with power or it can incarcerate you in a prison. Now, waiting on God was one of David's secrets. So powerful was he in his ability to wait that God looked at him and said, "That is a man after my own heart." Journey with me now to the Old Testament. And let's leave Paul in his prison in the New Testament. And let's go to Psalms. Psalms chapter 25. So we're leaving a man who is imprisoned but free. And we're journeying into the Old Testament to a man who's not imprisoned, and in the 25th verse, we find, though he's not imprisoned, he's not free. From the King James Version, beginning in the 3rd verse, it says, "Yea, let none that wait on thee be ashamed. Yea, let none that wait on thee be imprisoned. Let them be ashamed which transgress without cause. Show me thy ways, O Lord, and teach me thy paths. Lead me in thy truth, and teach me. For thou art the God of my salvation. On thee do I wait all of the day." Let's move to verse 21. Psalms 25 says in verse 21, "Let integrity and uprightness preserve me, for I wait on thee." How many of you grew up with a mother or a grandmother who spent time preserving things? Now, at my grandmother's house, she had a lot of apricot trees, or apricot trees, as some of you call that tree. And she also had peach trees. And each year she would spend an extensive amount of time preserving things. She knew that she only had a certain window of time in which she could preserve things. She knew that there would be value beyond just that day. She knew that if she would preserve those things in that day and then put them on a shelf and wait, that there would be more than just something to rejoice and be glad in today. But because she waited, there would be something that we could all enjoy in a day called tomorrow, or a day that you and I sometimes call later. And that's what David's saying here. He's saying is, don't waste your time waiting, but let integrity and uprightness be your discipline, your lifestyle. Begin to obey the things of the Lord you know today, and be faithful to trust the Lord with the things you don't know and can't control that are coming into your tomorrows. Sometimes you and I try to live days that we've not yet arrived at, and we fail to live obediently in the day that God has called us to rejoice in, to be upright and preserve in today. Let's go to Psalms 27. Verse 11. Psalms 27 and verse 11 says, "Teach me thy way, O Lord, and lead me in a plain path because of mine enemies. Deliver me not over into the will of mine enemies, for false witnesses are rising up against me, and such as breathe out cruelty. I would have fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord." Notice here that David, a person who in himself was very human, he recognized that you and I would struggle with the wait. And he tells us something that's going to happen to us if we don't assume the right disciplines as we wait. He says, "I would have fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living." Many of us today feel like we live in the land of death and the land of the dead. And we tend to have this temptation or this tendency to want to faint, to want to grow weary in well-doing, and just give up all the things that God requires of us today because it doesn't seem to be working. And that's what David is saying here. If I would have just thrown my hands up and fainted and gotten weary in my well-doing, I would have never seen the goodness of the Lord. I would have never seen the Lord take those things in my life that were difficult, those things in my life that caused doubt, those things in my life that someone or something spoke death to me. I would have never seen life in those areas if I would not have chosen to believe the goodness of the Lord. So as I waited and saw nothing else, I chose to see the goodness of the Lord. Not all the things I couldn't change, not all the things I couldn't control. I didn't choose to see the things I didn't understand. I chose the one thing and the one thing only I knew. And not just knew, but the one thing only I could trust, and that was Him. I set my eyes on things above and not beneath. I began to dwell on the things that were true and honest and just and pure, the things that were of good report, because that's the virtues of the Lord. That's the virtue of His presence. And so in my time that I did not understand, in my time I was tempted to give up what I was doing, in that time I wanted to faint and grow weary, I chose instead to see that when I am weak, He is strong. When things around me are bad, the one above me is good. And so I set my attention, I set my disciplines, I set my course, I set my compass on the one thing I knew and the one man I could trust. And His name was Jesus. Here's this man who's imprisoned on the inside, but free on the outside, struggling to get out of Dodge, so to speak. And so in Psalms 33 now, as we journey to verse 20, his teaching goes from just his heart being the classroom, and he begins to instruct our hearts in our classrooms of life. He says, "Our soul waiteth for the Lord. He is our help and our shield." He is our help and our shield. Any of you ever feel the enemy come in like a flood? And you found yourself either praying or saying to someone, and sometimes the only someone that'll listen to you is yourself, but you found yourself there. And you found yourself saying something that may have sounded a little bit like this: "You know, if I just had this to have to deal with, I could handle it." Or if I could just put this in a chronological order, like we'll resolve this today and then that tomorrow and this next week, then you could handle it. Ever hear something like that come from your world? And yet, by the mere virtue of the enemy coming in like a flood, everything has to be handled and resolved at once. Now let me back up to what I just said. I've heard myself say, if I just had this, I could handle it. And I think that's when God is screaming, very good, Leroy. I am your help and I am your shield. And part of the reason why you don't only have that is because you'll be tempted to take it in your own hands and do it in your own strength. And you might lead yourself to believe that you don't need me. But by the mere virtue that you can't handle all of this, it might just lead you to believe you might just consider me. Ever hear yourself say, well, I guess we might as well pray about it then. I guess I'll go find my Bible. Maybe God has something to say. And that's what David is teaching. He knows the tendency of you and I to try to handle things, resolve things, reason out things, use your mind to heal, fix, and control things. And he's saying in that day, you're going to be tempted to do those things. And in that day, when you feel that tendency pull you, and it's very, very strong. In fact, for most of us, it's the only nature we know. God is saying, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Don't go there. That will kill you. Go here. I am your help. I am your shield. I am your strong tower. I am your refuge. I am your comforter. I am your counselor. I am the mighty. I was kind of hoping you'd fill in the blank. I am the mighty. Okay. Well, we tried. I came across this book called Detours. Sometimes rough roads lead to right places. I thought that was a great name for a book. And from the book, the writer, Clark Cawthron, tells of a Christmas when his family encountered an unexpected house guest. A squirrel had fallen down their chimney into the wood burner stove in the basement of their Michigan home. Cawthron writes, I thought if the squirrel just knew we were there to help, I could just reach in and gently lift the squirrel out. You know, I don't know what he was thinking. Obviously, he wasn't. But as, he says, I reached in, it began scratching about like a squirrel overdosed on espresso. After further review, we finally considered and then managed to construct a cardboard box cage complete with a large hole cut into one side into which the squirrel waltzed into when we placed the box against the wood burner's door. We let it out into the safety of the backyard. Later, I was thinking again and thought, isn't it funny how before its redemption, our little visitor squirrel had frantically tried to bash its way out of the dark prison. It seemed that the harder the squirrel struggled in its own strength to get free, the more pain it caused itself. In the end, the squirrel simply had to wait patiently until one who was much bigger, one who could peer into his world, could carry him safely to the larger world where he belonged. And this is what we need for the Lord to do for us. That's what God is saying through David. You're going to be tempted to go there. And you're going to be like that little squirrel. Look around the room. It's not hard to go there for some of us. Quit looking at me when you laugh that way. And he's saying, man, don't go there. You are going to drown banging your head against the side of that word. And so he turned to the next chapter. He's saying, hey, you're going to just destroy yourself if you go here. You're going to bang your head against the side of the wood burning stove. And it's going to hurt. And it's going to burn you. And you're going to drown in all of these thoughts and all of these feelings that have been sent by the enemy to destroy you. He's saying, go here. It's not probably going to be natural. It's not going to be comfortable. You're going to have to learn trust that you did not have before this trial. But there's a little hole in the cardboard cage. And if you'll look for it, you will find freedom there. Because you will find me there. I am a help. And I am a shield to you. Now David in Psalms 37 begins to teach us how to find the hole or find the way out. This is how he found freedom. This is how he learned to wait patiently until the one much bigger than himself carried him safely into the world that God had prepared for him to inherit. I want you to recognize when God tells you to wait, that's a compliment. It's not a four-letter word to be used in vain or to feel great pain. It's God's way of saying, hey, look, the promise I've given you, I'm about to release to you in provision form. There is a way out of this mess. There is a way out of this stove that I sent or that I purposed, or even if the enemy sent, I will use to purify you and to prepare you and point your path in the direction of the world that I have desired for you. I gave you what to desire so you could have the desires of your heart. There's a reason you desire great things. There's a reason why you have great dreams and visions. I placed them there. Those are the desires I've given you to desire, so that in due season, through obedience and through waiting, you can walk through the door and you can go into the world that I have said is my desire for you to inherit. Because I said that you are a blessed people. I said that you are more than conquerors. I said that you are the head and not the tail. I said that you would be givers and not takers. I said you'd be lenders and not borrowers. I said you are not going to be slaved or enslaved to this world. I said you would be sons of God. You would be a nation of kings and priests, that you would be blessed coming and you would be blessed going, that you would be a people pressed down, shaken together, and running over. I said you couldn't be anything else. I said it would be harder for you to be down than for me to lift you up. And so David finally finds the door, and he tells us how we can find it. Now, I'm going to read three verses to you, and I'm going to warn you that most of you have developed a spiritual allergy to these three things. Psalms 37 says in verse 7, rest in the Lord and wait patiently for Him. Fret not thyself, little squirrel, because of him who prospereth in his way. I'm so sorry. Because of the man who bringeth wicked devices to pass. So right there we find two of them. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently. And in verse 8 he says, cease from anger and forsake wrath. Fret not thyself in any wise to do evil, for evildoers shall be cut off. But those that wait upon the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. Isaiah said it this way, but they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. I think it was the wedding yesterday. Brad and Christy had the most beautiful wedding. Those two really did love each other. That was kind of, I thought, kind of funny. Really did love each other, and they got married. Anyway, for those that didn't know, they had a wonderful day celebrating their wedding, and we appreciate so many of you that was a part of making that day special. And so now that we return to earth, the first thing that David says here is crucial to the process of inheriting God's supply of riches for your land is to rest. Now, get your feelings on your shoulders, because here is where the word kind of bruises us. And sometimes the word, it will bruise your mind to reveal the condition of your heart. And everyone said, ow. Sometimes the word makes you go, ow. Sometimes it makes you go, wow. And then sometimes it makes you just want to go, pow. But here we see, the first thing that David said is crucial to the process of being an overcomer or finding your way out is to rest. And this word rest comes from a Hebrew word meaning to be silent. To be still. To be dumb. That shouldn't be too hard. Number four, it says to calmly resign and leave all things in the hands of God. Thank you, media team. Doesn't that look great? Super. To be silent, to be still, to be dumb, and to calmly resign and leave all things in the hands of the Lord. Now, I don't know about you, but my tendency is, hey, I have no problem putting my things in the hands of the Lord. I can do that with the best of them. It's leaving them there. That's the difficulty. The second thing David said is crucial to the process of overcoming, finding the door, and going from being imprisoned to empowered is to wait patiently. So that's the second thing he says, is to wait patiently. This term also comes from a Hebrew word meaning to throw a fit. to pout and try to shout God out. It means to have a pity party. And finally, from the Hebrew, it means to wait patiently, means to complain loudly and ask God, why is everybody always picking on me? And everyone said, not exactly. The term wait patiently means to stay yourself, to stay oneself, to walk in self-control, to set oneself, secondly, to expect God to answer, and thirdly, to be determined. When we were in Texarkana, I began what you now know is our ministry, coaching in a Christian school. And I think part of the requirement to be in that Christian school was to suffer with ADD, ADHD, and have a high-strung A personality. So you kind of know where I'm going, right? Okay, because it seemed like all the students were that. And me being completely opposite, that was very difficult for us to get along. But one kid in particular, and I don't think he would be visiting today, but I won't call his name anyway. He would come in and he could not tell you anything clearly. He could not communicate anything because his body language was just going to the north, south, east, and west. And he would come in and he would just... He wouldn't even like, you know, knock on the door and wait for the answer. It was just... Brother Greg, you're not going to believe what I'm... And coach, they did this and coach, they did that. I mean, you know, he was speaking in tongues, but it was the wrong spirit. And I mean, he just, you probably remember him. I mean, he just, everywhere you saw him, if it was the mall, if it was at his house, if it was on the football field or on the basketball court, it was all that, it was all that. He was like a volcano and he was just looking for someone that he could just release himself on. And he would just do all of that. And it was there that we would start to teach him, calm down, bring it down about 1,000. Tell your neighbor, calm down, bring it down about 1,000. And I would joke with him and I would tell him, okay, now I heard it in that other language. Now tell it to me in English. And then he would tell me. I believe that's what David is saying, is that you and I know that about ourselves. When we get in trouble, we tend to be like that mouse or that squirrel in the story I told this morning. Sorry. Okay. How many of you are thinking this is the first time you visited the church and it may be the last time? Okay, we're like that little squirrel. And that little guy coached in Texarkana. We all of a sudden become these A-plus type positive, these just hyperactive ADHD, ADD, B-I-N-G-O people. And we're just like, I mean, you know, the door to freedom is closed. There is no door, but that doesn't stop us from just, you know, getting a run at it. Kapow! And that doesn't work, so we think if we just back up one more step and run a little faster, if we just try a little harder, we work a little longer, pray a little more. And we look like the Batman series, you know, where those words flash up on the screen of our lives. Pow! Bam! Gack! Whack! Or whatever. And we feel all this pain that God never intended for us to feel. And so what I think David is saying is, hey, I know that tendency. I've tried that way. And he's saying, hey, wait patiently. Stay yourself. Calm down. Bring it down about 1,000. Walk in one of the spiritual fruits called self-control. Now there's a thought. Set yourself and your energies not to try to make a door where there is no door, but take your energy and channel it to expecting God to provide the answer you do not see on the outward, but you know is there on the inward, because God gave you a promise bigger than your problem. And if you wait long enough, behold, the door will be open and you'll be stepping from your problem into your provision. You just got to be determined. My favorite story, I think, in all the world is that one about the little train. I love that little train. From an early age, I rooted for that little train because that little train believed in himself. He didn't listen to the belief of others about himself. He didn't listen to the world around him. He didn't look at the obstacle. He looked inside. He found the champion. He found the giant. He stirred up his faith greater than his fear. He went beyond his problem and saw his provision. And he said, I think I can. I think I can. I think I can. When you don't think you can, begin to declare, I know he can. 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 You can't wait for someone else to stir your faith and to open your door. Sometimes you got to look around and say, it doesn't matter what they think. I know what he thinks, and I know he can. Okay. And now we conclude from the third thing David taught us here. And you know what? This one is real important for those of us that are like me that demands an open door. Now. Some people are like, you know, God, you can open our door. Oh, I don't know, tomorrow, next week, next month. When you're not too busy, God, just open the door. And tell them we're going to get some bonbons, sit on the couch and watch soap operas. We're going to wait that way. See, David is teaching us there's a right way to wait and there's a wrong way to wait. And waiting, he knows from his own life, can promote anger in you. And he says, cease from anger. Being human, he knew something about the difficulty associated in and with waiting. He knew that living without God's supply in our life, that it by its very nature would stir up painful, imprisoning feelings and emotions. That's why he said here in Psalms chapter 37 and verse 8, cease from anger. Cease from anger, which means in the Hebrew, to relax. From being angry. Let it go. Let anger drop. Withdraw from being angry. Okay? Here I is. I is angry. I'm going to withdraw now. Angry, stay here. I'm going to the happy place. Okay. Do you get the picture? If you get the point, I can go on. You sure are laughing way too hard. I don't want to. I know that's not the open door. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Thank you for joining the BET Network today. Feels like a version of Comedy Central or View or... Relax, little squirrel, and quit being angry. Drop it. Let it go. Withdraw from being angry. Put your anger, which is like a gear in your car, it's a gear in your life. Put it in idle. Put it in neutral. Leave it alone. Abandon it is what the Hebrew says. Wow, why would David teach us this? He said, I want you to do three things. I want you to wait patiently. I want you to do what secondly? Or firstly, rest in the Lord. I want you to wait patiently. And then he's saying, cease from anger. He's not even saying, if you're angry, cease from it. What is he saying? Cease from anger. Here's a guy that had God's heart. God looked at this dude and he was moved by what was in this guy's heart. And this guy is saying, rest in the Lord. To open the door of provision in your life, rest in the door. Rest in the Lord. I'm finished, aren't I? Yeah. I mean, I'm not done in my notes, but I'm finished, aren't I? Stand to your feet, please. If I've learned nothing else in the years of being married, it's time to quit now. Actually, 10 minutes ago, but now's as quick as she could get the sign to me. But I think this will help you. Here's this guy who knew God. And even more than knowing God, God knew him. And God was moved after what he saw in this guy's life. And this guy was, he was pretty much a failure in certain parts of his life. And yet God said, you know, that dude still is after my heart. And he said, rest in the Lord, wait patiently, and cease from anger. He didn't say, if you're angry. He said, cease from anger. You know what I felt this morning is that a number of us feel anger in our hearts. There's just an anger in our hearts, an anger at many things, an anger for many reasons, an anger that's not just directed at those that we love here on earth, but the one who loves us in heaven. And today I feel like that's almost just the prophetic word, the word from the Lord, cease from anger. I could not agree more with what you said this morning, Harry. I felt like that was a word in season. It was like right on the mark this morning when you shared that. Thank you for taking that freedom and speaking that. And even now, he's saying, cease from anger. Now, why would David see that? I believe David saw in his life that that anger was about to cost him everything. His entire kingdom and all of his inheritance. And how did he know it was about to cost him everything? He looked into the life of his mentor, King Saul, and saw that it was King Saul's anger that cost Saul everything, his inheritance and his kingdom. And today I just believe that God wants you to cease from being angry. As a conclusion, I'd like to bring to you now the title of this morning's service and sermon. It was called The Trapeze Flyer. I want to liken waiting to being a trapeze flyer. Not long before his death, Henry Nouwen wrote a book called Sabbatical Journeys. He writes about some friends of his who were trapeze artists called the Flying Ruedelas. They told Nouwen that there's a special relationship between flyer and catcher on the trapeze. The flyer is the one that lets go, and the catcher is the one that... As the flyer swings high above the crowd on the trapeze, the moment comes when he must let go. In order for him to fulfill his purpose, in order for him to find the open door, he must let go. He hikes. He arcs out into the air. His job is to remain as still as possible and to wait for the strong hands of the catcher to pluck him from the air. One of the Flying Ruedelas told Nouwen, the flyer must never try to catch the catcher. The flyer must wait in absolute trust, as still as he can, so that the catcher can catch him as he waits. I feel like the Holy Spirit this morning is just saying to each of us, be still, or rest in the Lord. Wait patiently and cease from anger. Now, as an illustration, I believe Melvin either has put it up or is about to put it up. We're waiting, like the squirrel, for someone bigger than ourselves and our world to carry us where He wants us to be. And not as a denominational statement, but as a directional statement, God is saying, lift up your hands, rest in the Lord. As flyers, wait for the catcher. Be still and know, I am God. As you wait, cease from your anger. Go to your happy places, the place where you know that the Lord is good. Maybe everything else is moving in your world, but one thing is always constant, His Word. So, with heads lifted, because that's almost the byproduct of lifting your hands, as directional statements, not denominational statements, but as directional ones. Raise your hands this morning and be sure. Be sure that the catcher who art in heaven, hallowed be His name. His kingdom is coming right now. And it is orchestrating in and on your earth, His will being done. For He is not just your catcher, He is your shepherd, and He desires for you not to live in want. But as you raise your hands and raise your hearts this morning, you are signaling now with this powerful act of faith that He is coming. Now with your heads and your hands raised, take your voices and lift them there and begin to just rejoice. Dina's going to come, and as Pastor comes, we're going to sing a song of rejoicing as a dismissal song. But even now, before we start praising and rejoicing, we start praying, we start obeying, we start thanking and rejoicing about the day that God has given back to us. Anger's not going to steal it. Impatience is not going to steal it. Frustration and confusion, fear and unbelief is not going to steal the joy of the Lord that we have today. So we raise our hands, we raise our hearts, we raise our lives and just say, catch us, Lord. Have we got a good song to rejoice? Praise team, would you come?